Hier ist er rein.
Reichlich gestürzt.
24. Und der Handelsflecker! Übernachisch!
Das war ein grausiger Press. Mario! Schau dir das an. Wer gibt's das? Wer gibt's das?
Was ist denn dort?
Welcome, this is the spooky house, where you'll be here forever, but if you tell us a secret, we'll let you out.
Happy Halloween, and welcome back to Ski Heroes. My name is Ivan, and today is Monday, October 31st, 2022, as I'm recording Episode 7 from the Ski Lodge in Houston, Texas, the skiing capital of the world. Today is Halloween, and for those of you who thought that this podcast was not going anywhere, you were definitely wrong, because we are doing a Halloween special. The skiing history is full of scary stories. The state-sponsored doping program of East Germany that we kind of touched on in the previous episode would definitely qualify as one of those. Cross-country skiing could also easily qualify as another. The 50-kilometer gnarly cross-country ski race is full of stories about skiers who hit the wall on this over 2-hour race and barely made it to the finish line. Another cross-country story I came across was actually from the men's 30-kilometer race in the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics. The German skier Johann Mühleg, who prior to the Games had changed nationality to Spain due to his differences with the German Skiing Federation, absolutely dominated the Games, winning gold in pretty much every event he participated. Swedish skier Per Elofsson had dominated cross-country skiing prior to the 2002 Games, and especially the 30-kilometer race, which was his favorite distance. Elofsson was in the shape of his life, and as the skiers set out for the 30-kilometer Olympic race, Johan Mühle came blazing out of the gates and was skiing at a crazy high pace. Elofsson, being in such good shape, knew from previous competitions that he was a far stronger skier than Mühle. And as the race continued, Elofsson was the only one who was able to keep up with Mühle's superhuman pace. What Elofsson did not know was that Mühle was doped on the kidney medicine NESP, which stimulated the production of red blood cells. And at the high altitude of the 2002 Olympic Games in Utah in the United States, this was pure rocket fuel for Mühle. Elofsson tried his very, very best to keep up with Mühle, knowing deep down that he was a better skier. After half the race at 15 kilometer, Elofsson hit the wall so bad that he was not able to finish the race. In fact, Elofsson never really recovered from this race, and his career ended shortly thereafter. Mühle more or less came out of nowhere for the Games, winning gold at the 30-kilometer race, the 10-kilometer race, and the following 10-kilometer pursuit, and then also the 50-kilometer. All before his doping tests came back about as positive as they could get, and he was stripped of all the medals and expelled from the Games. But aside from this story, perhaps the most scary stories are found in alpine skiing, and then downhill skiing in particular. And of all the downhill races, the scariest of them all takes place every January in Kitzbühel in Austria. The course is the infamous course called Die Streif, and the race is simply called Hahnenkammrennen, named from the Hahnenkamm mountain where the race takes place. The first Kitzbühel race I ever saw on TV, or at least that I remember, was in 1991. The one thing that stuck with me from that race, even today when I think about it, was the extremely steep and icy hill toward the bottom of the course, where none of the skiers dared to be in the tuck position, and instead they were kind of squatted down with their arms out to the side for balance, and as they held on for dear life and skied down at over 130 kilometers per hour, 85 miles an hour. Kitzbühel is not that high up elevation-wise, and the town where the finish area is located is only about 800 meters, so about 2,600 feet above sea level. With that, snow conditions can vary quite a bit in Kitzbühel, and in 1991, it was not a great snow winter, which further contributed to the icy and extremely bumpy conditions. And if you look this race up on YouTube, you can definitely see what I'm talking about. So let's talk about the course itself for a minute. Die Streif. From the start, at 1,665 meters above sea level, 5,463 feet, and to the bottom of 805 meters above sea level, 2,641 feet, it is 3.3 kilometers, or right at 2 miles long. The vertical drop is 860 meters, 2,821 feet, and I have to say sorry to my American friends now, but from here on I will use metric measurements for distance and speed. The course usually takes about right under 2 minutes for a ski racer to complete, and what a 2 minutes it is for a racer. Canadian ski racer Bob Boyd finished third at the 1991 race I talked about earlier, that was the first one I watched on TV. And when he was asked to describe Die Steif, he said simply, "The first 30 seconds are sheer terror, and the last 30 seconds are sheer terror." And it's all about the names of the various passages of the course too. Startschuss, Mausefalle, Steilhang, Hausbergkante, Zielschuss. Each one enough to chill the spine of any good ski racer. The start area of Die Steif has been described as the calmest and quietest start area in the World Cup circuit. It is a very special atmosphere where the air is filled with nerves, anticipation, and sheer terror amongst the skiers. There is no time to relax on this course. Right from the start gate, the racer launches himself into the Startschuss with an average gradient of 51% right from the start. After only 8 seconds of skiing, the skier is already facing the Mausefalle, the mousetrap, immediately followed by the first jump of the course and also the longest one. Racers often fly 60, 70, maybe 80 meters at the Mausefalle. And immediately following the jump, the racer faces the Karussell, a 180-degree turn where he must endure centrifugal forces of over 3G. What a welcome to Die Steif. And it doesn't stop there. Immediately following the Karussell, the racer enters the Steilhang, considered one of the most technically challenging passages of the entire World Cup circuit, and the steepest part of the course, logging a whooping 85% gradient. Perfect edges and perfect timing is required for the skier to get through this compact and challenging part of the course, and for the racer to take as much speed as possible with them onto the least steep part of the course, which follows next. At this point, the skier is about 30 seconds into the race, and he's already been through a lot. For the next 60 seconds or so, the skier mostly remains in the tuck position. This is where he needs to be able to glide and not lose any speed as he goes through the Brückenschuss and the Geschoss sections. After a small jump, the skier enters the diagonal Alte Schneise and approaches the Seidalmsprung jump. And it's not that this part of the course is not difficult. The skier logs speeds of upwards of 120 kilometers per hour through the Alte Schneise diagonal. It's just that relative to the rest of the course, this part seems to be a lot easier. After the Seidalmsprung, the skier goes through the S-curve at Oberhausberg, and then starting at about 1 minute and 30 seconds into the race, it's back at it again. With about 30 seconds to go, the racer jumps over the Hausbergkante. This is the first time when the spectators in the finish area can also see the skiers, and the audience typically goes wild, especially when there's an Austrian skier racing. And to revisit Rob Boyd's quote, the final 30 seconds of sheer terror have started. Over the Hausbergkante, the skier easily jumps 30-40 meters, and he's going 90 to 100 kilometers as he lifts off. Going over the edge, the skier does not see the landing area until he is in the air, and landing at an area that is at a 69% incline. Immediately upon landing, the skier skis straight into a compression, and at this point is going about 110 kilometers per hour, as he must immediately make a sharp turn to the left and jump onto the traverse. Any imbalance at this point, and the skier is immediately wiped out. The traverse is at a sharp incline, and rarely do you see skiers in the tuck position across the traverse. Rather, they have their arms out to the side and they just to try to keep balance and hold on for dear life as they end the traverse at a speed of about 120 kilometers per hour and enter the final stretch down toward the finish line called the Zielschuss, the finish shot. If Die Steif is well prepared and or if the snow conditions are good enough, you will see skiers dare the tuck position down the final stretch. If the course is icy or bumpy, the skier will just squat down with their arms out to the side and hope for the best as they accelerate to speeds over 140 kilometers per hour and approach the very final challenge, the Zielsprung, or the Finnish jump in English. And what a final challenge it is. Going at that speed, the skier goes airborne one final time, easily flying over 50 meters, and a lot longer if you don't time the takeoff just right, and the skier finally crosses the finish line, being cheered on by over 50,000 fans. That's Die Streif, the race where the Hahnen Kamm Rennen takes place every January. One hell of a ride, as the movie about it is rightfully titled. And I was also going to call it The Widowmaker, but in all of my research, and kind of to my surprise, and I have to say I was very positively surprised, I could not find anyone who had actually died while skiing down Die Streif. So a much more appropriate term is therefore the caregiver maker, because a lot of skiers have gotten seriously injured on Die Streif, and a lot of careers have also ended here. A quick YouTube search on Kitzbühel crashes will give you just about an endless supply of crashes that have happened on Die Streif, one more spectacular than the other. It's almost poetic to watch some of the footage. It's like a predator chasing its prey, and the prey realizing that it's over even though the chaser has not quite yet caught up to him. Sometimes you can even say the predator is just playing with his prey, letting it think that it will get away, just to brutally catch back up with it again. The predator, of course, being Die Streif, and the prey being the poor skier who dared to ski her. So often you can see the skier fighting with everything he's got to stay alive, even though as a spectator you can so clearly see which direction this is going for several seconds before he actually wipes out. Other times, Die Streif hits immediately, and the skier doesn't even know what hit him before he ends up in the fence or the safety net, severely bruised or hurt if he's lucky, severely injured with broken bones and a career-ending trauma if he's not. Hahnen Kamm Rennen have been held annually every year since 1931, and starting in 1937, the race was held on Die Streif, when Austrian Hedda Schwabl won with a time 3 minutes and 53.1 seconds. As mentioned, skiers now ski Die Streif in about 2 minutes, so about 1 minute faster than they did back then. The fastest time being recorded down Die Streif was Fritz Doberl in 1997, skiing it in 1:51.58. Kitzbühel is a scene the entire winter with its legendary skiing and maybe even more legendary opera ski parties. And even more so during the Hahnen Kamm race, when spectators travel from all over the world to the town for the greatest race of the season. Celebrities are always spotted in the crowd, and from my own memory of watching the race on TV, Arnold Schwarzenegger of course is there every year, and also former Formula One racer Niki Lauda was always seen in the crowd every year until he passed away just a few years ago. And Kitzbühel has always been like this, a lovely mix between the rich and the beautiful, see and be seen people, ski racing fans, and the greatest downhill ski race on earth. And what a race they all get to see. In the 1960s, Karl Schanz was the biggest star, winning 4 times, a record that would last for many years to come. Franz Klammer, the Austrian daredevil, was the star in the 1970s, winning 3 times in a row from 1975 to 77, and tying Schanz's 4-time win record in 1984 when he won the Hahnen Kamm Rennen a 4th time. Pirmin Zurbriggen, the legendary Swiss skier, won the race 3 times back in the 1980s, and Swiss skier Franz Heinze kinda copied Franz Klammer's achievement, at least sort of, by winning 3 Hahnen Kamm races in a row when he won from in 1990 and in 1991. Because in 1991, 2 races were held in Kitzbühel, as one replaced a cancelled event in St. Anton in Austria that year. So he won the race in 1990, and then he won both races in 1991, including the very first Hahnen Kamm race that I saw on TV that I mentioned earlier. Many of the other great downhill racers in the years to come have won the race, including Fred Stoberl, Hermann Mayer, Dominik Paris, and Beat Feutz. And then, of course, the greatest Die Streif racer of all time, Swiss skier Didier Kösch, who won the race 5 times from 1998 until 2012, including 3 times in a row from 2010 to 2012. And perhaps the greatest run ever down Die Streif may have been Didier Kösch's race from 2011. I mean, you can just tell when he's at the start gate that he's in charge of this and he is going to win. And he races down with such conviction through the entire course and wins by almost a full second down to the next skier, an ocean of time in alpine ski racing. But this episode is not about the ones who made it. It's about the ones who did not. Because skiing Die Streif is not primarily about victory or chasing a win. It's about making it down alive, or at least making it down in one piece. Die Streif has a long list of victims. Ever since the race started, people have been fascinated by the spectacular skiing and the spectacular crashes from this race. This episode is far too short to cover all of these crashes. That is, actually the list of crashes is what's far too long to be covered and given proper justice in just one episode. And Die Streif does not discriminate. It will easily take out the World Cup leader just as well as those who are a little bit further behind. We'll start this story with the 1981 version of the Hahnenkamm race, which was a crash orgy. The bumpy course combined with poor visibility and flat light caused many skiers to wipe out spectacularly already at the Mausefalle jump less than 10 seconds into the race. For the ones who made it past the Mausefalle and also the Steilhang, the Hausbeikante was waiting for them. Among the victims who fell was Yugoslavian racer Bojan Krijac. Coming off the Hausbeikante, he loses control through the compression leading onto the traverse, and he goes airborne doing a spectacular flip in the air before he cartwheels through the snow until he stops right in front of a picket fence. He courageously attempts to get back up on his feet, just like a boxer who's been knocked down, but he can't as he keeps falling over as his head is spinning way too fast. Soviet skier Dagleb Guliev was another one who fell victim to the Hausbeikante this year. Losing control at the same compression after the Hausbeikante jump, he fights with all of his might and manages to stay on his feet for 7 seconds in a wild ride onto the traverse before he finally falls prey to Die Streif and wipes out. But at least he is able to walk away. Of the 56 skiers who started the 1981 Hahnenkamm race, only 39 made it to bottom, meaning that 17 crashed. Moving to the 1987 Hahnenkamm race, having made it all the way through the Hausbeikante and onto the traverse, Canadian skier Todd Brooker was eyeing the finish line when he loses control at the very end of the traverse, crashes into the gate that marks the end of the traverse, and tumbles like a rag doll down the final stretch and finally stops in the fence, laying down in the snow unconscious and looking far more dead than alive. Although he had won the 1983 Kitzbühel race, the 1987 race will be his very last one. In the fall, he suffered a concussion, a broken nose, facial injuries, and a knee injury. And, well, it also ended his career. And I guess Die Streif had a thing for Canadians, because just 2 years later, in 1989, she decided to take out Brian Stemmel. And this crash is a bit what I was talking about earlier. Die Streif playing with his victim before deciding to take it out. Coming out of the Steilhang, Stemmel is in serious trouble. Going into the Steilhang, Stemmel is out of balance. Not to the point where he's falling yet, but he's not in control as one needs to be going through the Steilhang, super steep passage. For several seconds, Stemmel is fighting with all he's got, while the centrifugal forces is getting the best of him. He's getting closer and closer to the net while he keeps trying to get away. Finally, he crashes into the net, and he does so in a brutal and spectacular way. Following the crash, the Canadian is in mortal danger, spending several days in intensive care. Suffering a smashed pelvis, he had to spend 3 months in the hospital and underwent 18 months of rehabilitation. Kudos to the guy, he did come back from the injuries, and he even skied Die Streif again, only to crash again in 1999, and that ended his career. A lot of the Kitzbühel crashes happen during either the first 30 seconds or the last 30 seconds of the race. The majority may actually happen during the final 30 seconds, at some point from when the skier jumps over the edge at the Hausbeikante and crosses the finish line either standing up or sliding as a result of a wipeout over the Zielsprung, the final jump. I don't dare to say it for sure as I don't have the statistics on it, but my guess is that the skier is getting pretty tired and mentally discharged at this point, and the combination of that with the fact that the course is just getting crazy at this point can be quite dangerous. In 1995, during training, Italian skier Pietro Vitalini, now there's an Italian name for you if you ever saw one, jumps onto the traverse and immediately loses control. Going about 110-120 kilometers per hour, he wipes out and crashes into the net. And it's not just into the net, but he goes through the net and he tumbles down in the deep snow below the net. The saving grace was that it had just snowed about 1 meter the night before. Without the snow, the area that he crashed into would have been more or less bare, and he would have cartwheeled over rocks and boulders, likely with a deadly outcome. But Pietro walked away from the crash unharmed, and he even finished fifth in the actual race a couple of days later. And 1995 was also the year when the American Chad Fleischer got his turn on the Strife. Having won the U.S. National Championship twice in downhill skiing, Fleischer was ready to make his mark on international skiing. Chasing his first World Cup victory of his career, he saw Kitzbühel as his chance. In training, he had been one of the fastest skiers of the test runs. Fleischer races through the course during the competition with everything he's got, and he's neck and neck with the best time. Onto the Zielschuss, the final stretch, he is the only skier who dares to maintain a tuck the whole way. Going over 140 kilometers per hour onto the final jump, the Zielsprung, his skis catches air and it goes airborne about 7 meters up in the air and he completely loses control. For the spectators, all they can see is the underside of two skis pointing straight up in the air as Fleischer flips backward and lays straight in the air over the Zielsprung and he lands on his neck with both skis more or less exploding on impact. He severely injured his knee in the fall and miraculously is not paralyzed from landing on his neck. The year after, in 1996, several racers fell during training. Austrian skier Andreas Schiffre crashes so bad he was in a coma for 3 days after his wipeout. And like I said, Die Streif does not discriminate. She's an equal opportunity destroyer when it comes to careers. In 1999, the Olympic downhill champion from the 92 Albertville Winter Games, Austrian Patrick Ortlieb, suffers a horrible crash which injured his knee and left hip and breaks his right hip just for good measure. He is forced to retire as a result of the injuries. And of course, the list of crashes did not slow down just because we entered a new millennium. In 2005, Austrian skier Thomas Gagaber does a huge jump over the Haus bei Kanter. In reality, his crash starts here, even though he still has a few more seconds left to ski. The sheer fear he must have felt as he went airborne over Hausberg, and the moment he realizes he's jumping further than he should, is something I never hoped to experience. And you can kind of see it too, as he waves nervously with his arms toward the end of the jump, and he lands very close to the compression that leads the racer onto the traverse. When he lands, he only has a split second to try to make the turn onto the traverse, but he is not able to. The compression causes him to go airborne for 2 seconds, and that's 2 seconds that must have felt like an absolute eternity before he crashes to the ground and cartwheels through multiple layers of safety nets, suffering broken ribs and severe damages to both his shoulders and his lungs. Gagaber is forced to end skiing after this crash. In 2008, American skier Scott McCartney makes it almost all the way through the course. But just like his countryman Chad Fleischer had done 13 years before him, he loses control at the final jump and in a spectacular way flies sideways through the air and lands on his right hip, losing both skis and his helmet on impact, and his lifeless body slides on the snow throughout the rest of the course and crosses the finish line. Scott McCartney suffers a traumatic brain injury and has to be put in an artificial coma, but against all odds, he can leave the hospital 3 days later without any further injuries, and he even makes his comeback the following season for the season opener in Lake Louise in Canada. And as mentioned before, here it is again, Die Streif does not discriminate. Perhaps it is appropriate that way. Death and Die Streif comes to us all, regardless of social status, income, or certainly world championship titles. In 2009, Swiss world champion skier Daniel Albrecht is almost there. Going 140 kilometers per hour down the final stretch, he goes airborne, just like Chad Fleischer did on the final jump. His skis catch air and he is flipped backwards, landing on his neck after a 60-meter flight, suffering severe traumatic brain injury and crushed lungs. Over 3.5 weeks later, he finally wakes up from the coma, and he's able to make a comeback on the race course in December 2010. However, the trauma suffered from the crash has had its impact on him, as he is never able to return to the same level of competition as he once was. And he retires from international skiing in 2013. 2011, the year of the near-perfect Die Streif run by Didier Kösch, was another crash orgy. Austrian Hans Gruger misses the Mausefalle jump and is smashed to the ground. The crash actually did not look as dramatic or as spectacular as some of the classic Kitzbühel crashes do. It just looked like it hurt. A whole bunch. And indeed, he suffered a career-ending head, chest and lung and rib injury. Another one bites Die Streif dust. And the list goes on, but quite frankly, I'm starting to get kind of sick from describing all of these bone-crushing crashes and career-ending injuries. So I'll just point out two more, and then we will stop. In 2016, the Norwegian skier Aksel Lund Svindal was a force to be reckoned with on the race course, having won multiple world championship golds and Olympic medals already in his career. Indeed, he was also among the favorites to win the Hanenkam race this year. As he races through the course, he is neck and neck with the leader, and going over the house by Kante, he is chasing the lead by only 24 hundredths of a second. But, as so many before him, he loses control for one split second, and then he enters the compression that leads toward the traverse, and he's jolted into the air and does a dramatic spin before crashing through several layers of safety nets. Needless to say, Svindal did not ski more that season, having torn ligaments in both knees. Impressive enough, he did come back to win the Olympic downhill gold 2 years later in Pyeongchang in South Korea, though. We'll feature one more crash, just because it is a good reminder of never taking anything for granted. In 2021, Swiss skier Urs Kröenbühl was one of the favorites to win, given his strong performances in the previous downhill races that season. During the race, however, he is not living up to the expectations, and he's chasing his countryman and ultimately the winner of this race, Beat Feutz, by over 1.5 seconds by the time he finishes the traverse and goes on into the tuck position down the final stretch. Fast snow and excellent conditions this year causes him to accelerate to over 147 kilometers per hour as he enters the Zielsprung jump. And contrary to the previous crashes we have described by Americans Chad Fleischer and Scott McCartney over the Zielsprung, Urs Kröenbühl's skis do not catch air, causing him to flip backwards. Instead, he leans too far forward and takes off almost like a ski jumper, flying for what must be at least 60 or 70 meters through the air before crashing on his face, and his body eventually slides across the finish line. Although he did recover, he suffered a concussion, a fractured collarbone, and a tear in the cruciate and inner ligament of his right knee. And I could have continued with this for several more hours, it seems like, but I am getting really sick at this point, so we will stop here. Wanting to do a Halloween special episode, writing about the Hanenkamrennen seemed like a brilliant idea, as it is just about the scariest thing I could think of, at least in terms of skiing. Researching the story for the episode was a lot of fun up until a point, but then you start realizing the massive consequences and the impact this course has had for so many skiers, and you read about and subsequent watch one career-ending crash after the other, and yeah, I don't know. Safe to say, this episode had the desired Halloween effect, at least on me. Die Streif is a force to be reckoned with. One hell of a ride. Why so many people dare to tempt fate and challenge her year after year is way beyond me, but hats off to those of you who do. And for those of you who don't make it, at least we can take some comfort in that nobody forced you, you did it on your own free will. That is all I can say. I want to say a big thank you to Flynn for providing a super spooky intro to this episode. This being a special episode which was more about a particular race than individual ski heroes, it also kind of broke a bit with the format that I've laid out for the podcast so far. But fear not, I hope to be back with the next episode within a few weeks, and then we'll be back at it again, meticulously dissecting the story of a new ski hero in the most nerdy way. Until then, I hope you get to enjoy some fun ski time if you happen to live in an area that has already received some snow. And for those of you who don't, myself included, please continue your snow dances. As always, you can stay up to speed on the latest and greatest from Ski Heroes on Instagram, and I hope you will tune in next time.
Welcome to Hanenkam!